Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Familiar with the Art Gallery of Ontario? Its home is in Toronto. It's been there since the early 1900s, but in 2008, it was transformed by the renowned architect Frank Gehry and is one of the largest galleries in North America. It has more than 90,000 works of art. Georgiana Ulyarik, my guest today, is Associate Curator of Canadian Art at the Art Gallery of Ontario. Originally from Romania, she received a Bachelor of Arts from the University of Toronto and a Master's in Art History from York University, where she is an adjunct faculty member. Georgiana's recent curatorial projects and publications include Georgia O'Keeffe with London Tate Modern and Bank Austria Kunstforum, Florian Stettheimer painting poetry, that exhibit, at the Jewish Museum in New York City. I saw it and I absolutely loved it. And Picturing the Americas, landscape painting from Terra del Fuego to the Arctic with the Terra Foundation for American Art and Pinacoteca do Estado de Sao Paulo. Among Georgiana's curatorial collaborations at the Art Gallery of Ontario, Rita Latondra, Fire and Light, The Passion of Kathleen Munn, and Betty Goodwin, Work Notes. She's also participated in an international research network exploring feminism and curating. Georgiana, welcome, and thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
When did you move from Romania to Canada, and why?
Well, I was born in Romania in the early 1970s, and as you might all know, Romania was a communist country, and it was not a very lovely experience in terms of just political freedom and expression. And so my parents decided to immigrate from Romania, and first we moved to Israel, where we lived for a year and a half, and then we came to Canada in 1985. So I was able to do high school and then university here in Canada.
Was that a shock for you as a teenager to come to Canada?
It really was, because in Israel, I didn't speak any Hebrew, so I had to learn Hebrew. In Canada, I didn't speak any English, so I had to learn English. So I don't speak Hebrew anymore, except for a couple of words. But the language that I always say I speak best is a combination of Romanian and English. So these are the people that I can communicate most easily with, are those that we can sort of intermingle words back and forth. You know, sometimes words only come in one language and they seem like just a precise word.
Right, that there's a universality to the word.
Exactly.
Even though you had a year experience in Israel away from your home country, it must have been, well, let me presume, was it traumatic as a teenager to just find yourself plopped in two different countries?
I guess I wouldn't say it was traumatic. It was just kind of disorienting, you know, because I was an only child. So it really was a sort of very small unit, just the three of us trying to understand where we kind of found ourselves. And, you know, the way that we immigrated at the time, and I think it's common to many, many people and many families, is that there was a real understanding that we could never go back. So there was this kind of commitment to understanding where we were and what this new life meant for us, you know. And then I think the parts that were the most difficult is trying to understand how you navigate the culture that you find yourself in. And of course, friends and missing family and all those things. So I wouldn't say traumatic, but it was definitely life-changing. It was transformative and very, very intense. But I have to say that in retrospect, I wouldn't have it any other way. You know, it was my world suddenly exploded. You know, Romania, I had a beautiful childhood. There's no doubt about that. But I always knew, and, you know, in my family, we always talked about it, that the world was so much bigger than the one that we were able to explore at the time. And Romania has a rich culture and a rich history, but there was always a way in which you understood that the way we could speak and who you could speak to was always very guarded. I connected very much to the kind of work I do today, that kind of, for me, you know, freedom of expression, the ability to be who you are and live life on your own terms, to me, are fundamental human rights that are expressed through cultural expression and cultural production. So I think that that's what the experience has taught me, is how precious these basic human rights are, you know, beyond shelter and food and
security. Right. Have you been back to Romania?
I did go back when my grandparents were still alive, but I have not been back since the year 2000, which feels kind of ominous to me. Although I still have a number of friends who are much more connected to Romania, and you know, my mother and I often talk about, you know, going back and really, really seeing the country, because we've traveled all around the world, but we haven't really traveled through Romania, so it's one of those things that I think we're going to have to do sometime soon.
When you were growing up, did you have an interest in art? Where did it come from?
I think that it was inevitable. Again, I think it has to do with this basic idea of being able to express yourself. So one of my grandmothers was a painter and an art teacher. My mother was trained as an architect, and then she worked as an architect. My father had wanted to be an artist, but his parents told him that it was not very practical kind of career to have. So there was no higher calling in my family than to be involved in some kind of cultural activity. In fact, I was thinking about this the other day, that my maternal grandmother, who was the painter and the art teacher, she had this encyclopedia of artists. And I remember, you know, there was an image and then there was a description. And I remember cutting things out of magazines or newspapers or whatever I could find, and kind of almost making what I think of now as kind of baseball cards, you know, with like basic information about who the artist was and what they painted and what the painting was. So somewhere in the back of my mind, this was the trajectory that was being formulated for me.
Did you have a particular attraction to one type of art or another growing up?
I think it was all of it. And I think, you know, when I was growing up, there really the only thing we could imagine was painting and sculpture. You know, this was, you know, and in the sort of Western canon. But Romania, of course, is very, very proud of one of its most important artists, which is an early modernist sculptor. His name is Constantin Brâncuș, who I
Oh,
think
sure. Oh, yeah.
many people know. So I think,
What an iconic figure, of course.
Exactly. And I remember my father and I used to walk through our neighborhood, and we would walk by this house, and this was a house for, you know, from the early part of the 20th century. It was a house of important collectors of Brâncuș, and we talked about how their collection had been confiscated, and they, you know, and so Brâncuș was someone who was always existed as a larger than life figure for me. And it's actually quite interesting, because you know, the world of art claims him as this kind of universal artist, and for me, he's such a stereotypical Romanian. You know,
And
like
why do you say that?
I look at his work and I can see the kind of, you know, peasant houses that they would have in Oltenia, where he comes from, like all of the forms and all of the materials. Everything to me is very, very reminiscent of coming from a small village in Oltenia. I think also the way that he lived his life, even though he lived in Paris, you know, he doesn't become a French citizen until the very end of his life. And in photographs that you see of him, you see that you know, he's, to me anyway, an unmistakably Romanian man from, you know, from the country. So it's an interesting paradox for me that he's been claimed as this kind of universal artist, when for me, he's so much from where he's from.
Yes, you can almost feel proprietary about him in all the years since. He's my guy. Growing up, did you want to be an artist?
No, I was never interested in painting or sculpting or really, or, you know, taking photographs or anything like that. I always envied people who said, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" You know, and they always had an answer. And I really couldn't think of anything to say. So I think at one point I said something like, "I'd like to be a thinker." And I think that, to a certain extent, that is the best part of my job, that I get to think out loud with my colleagues, that I get to think out loud with peers and with visitors, and with artists. I mean, I think that is the biggest privilege that I have, is to be in artist studios and to see how they think and how they see the world, and that in exchange makes me think differently about the world. So no, I didn't want to produce anything, but I wanted to understand the world. I guess this was what I've always wanted to do. And I think through looking at all these images that I would find in these books, and of course, in our house, we were surrounded by art, the art of my grandmother, the art of my other grandparents who had some work that came through their family. It was very, very precious. And, you know, these days, a lot of homes you walk into, you see a lot of posters or reproductions, but that was never the case when I grew up. And I don't know whether it was just the Romania or Bucharest or what it was, but in every home that you entered, there was always sort of real works on the wall. And I think that makes a really big difference in terms of how you live and understand the world.
That art was accessible and a natural act.
Exactly. That kind of living with it and that kind of
right.
repeat. When I was pregnant, I have twins, and I knew that it was going to be rather an adventure. And so when I was rather pregnant, I walked into an art gallery and I bought a print that I loved quite a lot. And, you know, it's a rather curious thing to have, I think. It's on the wall as you come down the stairs in my home. And the other day I was talking to my sons about it, and they said, well, that has to be there every morning when I come down the stairs. I have to look at it. If it wasn't there, I wouldn't know what was going on.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So I think those things are so important. They're these kinds of touchstones in your life, you know, that that they hold some meaning that may be very, very personal. And I think that art can be that way. It can be shared, but also it can be very, very personal.
Absolutely. How did you get to the Art Gallery of Ontario?
I worked my way there. There were a number of other galleries. In Canada, galleries are not commercial. I forget that in the United States, they're often thought of as, so more art museums, if you like.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, because I was so struck by that. When I saw photos of the Art Gallery of Ontario, it's this massive, fabulous building. But
yeah.
And I wonder, what's the difference in between a museum and an art gallery?
Well, there is no difference. I mean, Canada, this is the term. I think it's more related to the way in which in the United Kingdom galleries are thought of. So, you know, the National Gallery of Art in London. So very rarely are major art museums called art museums. There are those, but most often they're just called galleries. So the Art Gallery of Ontario is a major art museum. That would be the description of it, but it's called a gallery. When I was doing my graduate work at York University, I had one of the most amazing art history professors in Canada, Joyce Zeemans, and she had curated, and she was also an art historian, and she had done a number of projects at the Art Gallery of Ontario in the past. And one of the best parts about that program is that at the time they offered an internship. So I knew that the Art Gallery was working on this exhibition of Betty Goodwin, who's an artist from Montreal. And so I kind of accosted the chief curator at the time, mm-hmm. who happened to be Matthew Teitelbaum, who's now the director of the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. And I said, I would like to be your intern on this project. And he said, okay.
What year was that?
And this was 1997. So what happened was that he agreed to let me be his intern, and he did the most amazing thing, which is one day he said, let's go to the vaults. And he opened the door to the vault and he said, all right, here you go. Look at the work and write about it.
Wow.
So that was an extraordinary experience, because, you know, once sort of that person sort of opens the door for you and you can see really behind the scenes and how things work, and you really get to understand the work of art, not in the way it's presented on the wall that's already been really thought through and kind of in the best light, but you really get to interact with it as an object on your own terms. And you know, as soon as I had that experience, I knew that I wanted to be a curator rather than an academic, and finished my degree. I had several other jobs. And then in the end, I ended up in a curatorial position at the Art Gallery of Ontario.
And what year was that?
I've been there ever since.
And what year is that?
That was in November 2002.
What's the genesis of a collaboration?
There's many different ways to get there, and all of them sort of are their own flavor, and they bring their own wonderful characteristics with them. So, for example, the one that I think perhaps is the most unique of all that I've been involved with is the one called Picturing the Americas, Landscape Painting from Tierra del Fuego to the Arctic, which I did with PJ Brownlee from the Terra Foundation and Valeria Piccoli from the Pinacoteca in Sao Paulo in Brazil. And sometimes it happens just by happenstance, if you like. But in retrospect, it feels like it was kind of meant to be. So I was giving a talk about Canadian art at a conference in Chicago, and PJ happened to be there. And he had been thinking with the Terra Foundation of a project that was hemispheric. They really wanted to look at the tradition of landscape painting in a hemispheric view rather than in a kind of nationalistic way. And he'd been talking to the Pinacoteca about it. And then he said, well, if we're going to go hemispheric, we have to also think about Canada. And so he contacted me, and that was a 5-year-long project we started together, really from scratch.
Wow. You
know, how do we think about this? What are the histories of the way in which this material has been approached? What can we contribute? How much can we shift the perspectives of both visitors and academics who think about this material? You know, and it's interesting, you know, the way I was kind of talking about Brancusi, kind of feel nationalistic about it, or at least you feel like you want that pride to come through. It was very interesting because all of us kind of had to go through that process of letting go of certain ideas, letting go certain ways of thinking about what we've inherited and knowledge that we've been given. And so the reason I think it's quite an exceptional collaboration is because we were all transformed and changed. Our practice, the way we think about the work that we do, I think is forever changed because of the profound experience that we had working together. And to be honest, that project ended, I'd say, I guess, 2 years ago, and we are in constant contact.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, because I think there was something that that happened
that resonated.
Yes, and every, you know, we've moved on to different projects, but we can feel echoes of what we've done together. So, to me, that is the most extraordinary collaboration, for the institution to change and for the curator to change and to really add something to the field, for other people to kind of take up and move on and then make their own.
You know, it's interesting also about the Georgia O'Keeffe exhibit that you did in conjunction with the Tate Modern. And there's a very big, as I'm sure you know, exhibit taking a different look at Georgia O'Keeffe at New York's Brooklyn Museum, you know, through her clothing and some other photographs.
It's a wonderful exhibit. It's absolutely fantastic.
It sure is. That woman's legacy will just never, ever, ever die.
It's amazing. You know, this is, I think, the thing that O'Keeffe offers again and again, and why, like you say, she will continue to resonate, is because it is so clear in everything that she does that she lived life on her own terms. And even though there were moments when she had a lot of difficulty, or she was actually rather frustrated by the way things went, it never deterred her from insisting that she has a presence, that she has a voice, and that she really has something quite extraordinary to offer the world. And to me, that is the most inspiring thing about O'Keeffe, that you get that unequivocally when you walk in. You know, in the Brooklyn Museum exhibition, I really felt that she was present,
you know, because I
think they had done such a marvelous job with the clothing and with the way in which the clothing was presented. It was very few dresses or very few objects. And so you really just had almost like an apparition. She was just there, present in every space. And I found that to be very, very evocative.
I agree. I want to talk a little bit about, how did the Florin Stettheimer exhibit come to pass at the Jewish Museum in Manhattan?
Yes, and so the exhibition will come to the Art Gallery of Ontario in October. So I am just beginning sort of preparations of how the space is going to look and how we're going to present Stettheimer in Toronto, which has to be very different from New York, because of course New York is her whole world, and she is much more familiar to people in New York, where this is the very first time that she will be shown in Canada. So it's a different kind of foray introduction, if you like. So the Art Gallery of Ontario and the Jewish Museum have had a very long history of working together on projects. This is a project that the Jewish Museum had been thinking about doing for some time, and we've been in conversation. And since my area is early modern women, then the two institutions got together and said, okay, let's see what we can develop together. Stephen Brown, who's the curator at the Jewish Museum, had already sort of started the process. And then since then, we became back and forth in conversation about how to present her and what are the ways in which that she's going to resonate in New York versus the way she's going to resonate in Toronto. I mean, she's just, to me, she's so fascinating. And especially this year, you know, having worked on the Georgia O'Keeffe, and, you know, O'Keeffe and Stettheimer were very good friends.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. O'Keeffe did the eulogy for Stettheimer when she passed away in 1944. O'Keeffe was younger by maybe 15 years or so. But, you know, they were part of the same circle and they had the same struggle. And what to me, what's fascinating is the way in which these two artists who are women responded to the challenges of society and the challenges of their own times, you know, and they responded in a very different way. But they're very, very interconnected. And in the essay that I wrote for the publication, I looked at one Florine Stettheimer painting, and there's one by O'Keeffe called Manhattan that's just from the year before. And there's some very interesting connections in the way they are both looking at the city at the same moment. And they have such different visions of it, but fundamentally, the impetus to express how they feel about the city is the same, but they just look so very different as paintings. It's fascinating.
What's so wonderful about what you do is the exposure, whether you are O'Keeffe or you're another female artist. I mean, she's so iconic. I want you to talk about this concept of exploring feminism and curating in art. I interviewed the director of the National Museum of Women in the Arts, and I was stunned when she dropped the statistic that women compose 6% of the exhibits in museums. 6%!
Yeah. It is astonishing. And
I mean, you have a mission here in a way,
I
Georgiana.
Do. And, you know, this has been my mission, you know, and it's, you know, when I give talks to universities and classes and so on, often it becomes very obvious because my list of projects are all women.
Yeah.
So
that's great.
It becomes very clear. I don't need to say it. It's just what it is. And I think that in some ways, very little has changed. And I mean, obviously, you know, women are one area, but there's many different artists that really contribute in such beautiful and extraordinary ways to our culture and culture in general. And the opportunities are often not there because, to a certain extent, museums and their beginnings come from such a conservative place, if you like, and they tended to be much more about authority and establishing whether it's taste or whatever ideas of quality that we have, that they tended to be so much more about exclusion rather than about inclusion.
Right.
I think very much is changing these days, where museums have begun to think of themselves as, you know, civic institutions that are about bringing people together to have difficult conversations, because in many ways, it's a very safe place to have really complicated and complex conversations about all of the realities of being in the world today, whether it's climate change or political issues or any other issues that affect our lives really on a daily basis. But it's a slow transformation. And especially large museums, you know, as you know, in New York with, you know, the Met and the MoMA, they also have different challenges, you know, that have to do with attracting a large number of visitors and so on. And all museums face this as well. And I think that sometimes it's just a little bit easier to go to the tried and true. So then it becomes a question of, And you know, this is basically what I try to do with the work that I do is, you know, how do I expand this field? How do I introduce or present work that will resonate, you know, on one hand with iconic paintings or beautiful paintings or works of art in general, and yet try to make everybody's world bigger, you know, in terms of what we're looking at. I mean, on one hand, it's exhibitions, but on the other hand, it's also about collections. You know, museums have major, major collections. Like, you know, you were mentioning the large collection that the Art Gallery of Ontario has. And very few of those works are by women artists or by Indigenous artists.
What a surprise.
Exactly. So the work isn't just about exhibitions, it's also about acquisitions and public programming and, you know, who gets to speak and who has presence and all of that. You know, it's a slow shift, but there has to be a kind of insistence that the world is bigger than what we've known so far.
So talk to me about the work that you've been doing connecting feminism and curating.
I think that there are curators who simply live feminism and this is what they do, and it embeds all of the work that they do. They may not necessarily title it that or make a statement about it, but in the way that they act and in the way that they present projects is very much from a feminist perspective. I don't think that feminism is exclusively about women. I think feminism is really about that idea of equality and having a bigger perspective in the world.
But isn't it also about pushing to get women artists out there?
To me, pushing to get women artists out there is almost the, let's say, the practice of it. But it's not the sort of the vision of it,
okay,
right? For example, we know with Georgia O'Keeffe. So it's a complicated thing with O'Keeffe because in many ways, she didn't want people to talk about her biography and she didn't want people to talk about her as a woman, right? So these were very much her wishes. And yet, these are fundamental things that people are fascinated by and also that define her. So for me, the way that I think about, for example, feminist practice in this case is how do I deal with these two things, her wishes as an artist, and at the same time, the work as it resonates 100 years later after she's made it. So I have to think about and be responsible for the way in which I present her biography, that it is deeply connected to the artistic choices that she makes. And so I think about these decisions she makes in her life that lead directly to critical ways in which her artistic career develops. And what are some of the challenges that were presented because of that? And what are some of the opportunities? So I think of that as very much a responsibility. And I think that in dealing with it this way, it is something for everyone. I'm not trying to impose something on her that she would have disliked. And at the same time, I'm not denying something that is absolutely there, despite the fact that she denied it. So to me, that is how to think about what is the contribution, what is the significance and the importance of artists who are women who have been artists and have produced such unbelievable material that for many different reasons, sometimes is not well known in a very public way.
And may have been marginalized by virtue of the fact that institutions have not curated their work.
And they have not curated and also have not collected it.
Or collected it, right.
when we were doing the transformation, we were looking at the Art Gallery of Ontario's collection, and we wanted to look at artists from the 19th century who were painting in an academic style. And we wanted it because it was our own permanent collection. We wanted to look at artists that we had in our collection, and we simply didn't have any. It doesn't mean that they didn't exist. It doesn't mean that the work isn't out there. It just means that when we wanted to install that work, it was not there. So it's a kind of constant perpetuation of the same omission and erasure. You know, and that, like I said, that has to do with one example of, you know, let's say, you know, women painters from the 19th century. And when you are faced with that, that's when you realize that this has to be something that is addressed, not simply for quota, right? Not simply to say, well, now here we have a number of them, but rather because we want to have a much more nuanced and complex and complicated understanding of what it meant to be a painter in the 19th century in Canada. So in other words, it's not about just including women, but it's about all of us having a much better understanding of what it was really like and what the heritage, if you like, or what the legacy really
or
is.
Or history.
Because it's been streamlined, right? And we need to think through the complexity of it.
Whoa. Well, we covered a lot of ground, Georgiana, and we've basically run out of time. I know that I could keep talking on and on with you. I feel like I attended a lecture.
Oh, thank you so much. It was such a pleasure. These things are really meaningful to me, and I hope that they really offer something to everyone who comes to the AGO or who goes to the Jewish Museum to see the Stedheimer exhibition or in the Brooklyn to see O'Keeffe. I mean, that's just a marvelous, marvelous, beautiful exhibition. And it is really once in a lifetime that you're going to see that approach to O'Keeffe.
Well, thank you for the work you do. You know, we're really all grateful. And it was so my pleasure to get to meet and know you and to have a conversation with you. Much more continued success. I know you have your work cut out for you.
Thank you.
Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.